Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. That's great. I love this idea of what Karen's doing, and I want to jump on. But I'm reminded of the early days, the journey of like being Christian, and the violent communication to myself, but also the manipulation of how do you evangelize to your friends, right? Like get them to come to church. And one of the most greatest questions I loved was when people asked me, "So do you go to church, or where do you go to church?" And because that was the gateway into like the bigger conversation. But now, at West City, put your hand up if you hate that question. Like, where do you go to church? Right? Yeah. Because I know what they're asking. We all know what they're asking. And you know what they're about to say next, which is, well, you know, the church has had a problem with this and that issue and queer people and this and that. And I kind of find myself wanting to defend Jesus and the church, but at the same time going, you don't know what you think is not true, or the years and years of what the Christian church has portrayed and done doesn't represent Jesus. And it's really hard to have that conversation in a matter of minutes. So I really dread that question. And sometimes people have known me for 3 years and found out 3 years later, "Hey, you go to church? Didn't know that." I've been dwelling on that for a while now, and I've realized that my response is I go to West City Church in Wembley. It's a Church of Christ church, and I talk about the church. I talk about what our ethos and what the vibe is here, the idea that anyone is welcome, and the idea of the table that, you know, nothing disqualifies you unless you believe you need to be there, you know, better than someone else or more than someone else. And I realize even that doesn't do it justice, because I don't just go to West City, do I? Like, I'm a part of West City. I'm a part of this community. And I'm thinking of the table, and when the invite is, you know, come to the table and we're at the table, it's, you know, the vision or the idea in my mind's eye is a lot like the Last Supper, where Jesus ate and broke bread with the very person that was going to betray him, right? And Jesus, you know, knew that, and he still broke bread and ate with him. And that's weird to me. Imagine sitting with someone who's offended you, hurt you, or is about to. I just can't fathom it, personally. And so I'm like, you know, thinking of the church as a whole, and if I was a PR agency and I was asked to, improve the church's image globally, my recommendation would be you need a rebrand. In fact, you know, just quash this organization, start a new one with directors, like, you know, and just siphon the money into it, and then you've got a bit of startup capital. But all that just to kind of, you know, to cover up or to separate from the years and years and centuries of heartache and pain that's connected to the church. And when I think of the table, it actually, I think of having a meal with someone we know, you know, like we go to their house, we show up, right? And a lot of the time we show up and they're expecting us. Sometimes we can show up at houses for a meal and they're not expecting us. So whether you're an expected or an unexpected guest, I think there are some relationships that we can still show up and still be invited in and still be welcomed in. And they just go, "Okay, something's clearly up if you've shown up uninvited. Come on in, let's have a meal, let's talk about it." And I think that's the vibe I get, you know, when I think of West City, when I think of the table here. And this showing up word is interesting, because you show up with everything. You show up with your baggage, with who you are, the face that you've got on, the mask that you've got on, and you could take that off. And I think there's something really cool there, because the minute you talk about who are those types of people that you show up as yourself with, I think that's family, isn't it? Like, that's your family or the people that you love the most. And I think that what ties us together is not about I go to West City, maybe more so that I belong to West City. And I found my language changing around that, around I belong to this community of people that are, you know, like, that are more concerned with what it is to live out like Jesus than it is to, you know, be a church and to be an organization that preaches the word. I'm so grateful to belong to this community that puts other people first, that wants to be make a difference in the community. And I wanted to ask, and I've asked myself this question for the last few months, and I wanted that to pose that to you too, is whom do you belong to, and where do you belong? And what does belonging mean to you? Because it's different to just going to. We go to sports events, we go to dinners and meals, we go to parties, but do you go to church or do you belong here, and what does that look like? Thank you.
That's good, Kai. Stop it. This is terrible. All right. Don't use that last one, but the rest of it, if you just want to pepper it through, if something speaks to you, you just go for it, all right? Look, I want to read a quick poem before we get stuck in. I wrote it years ago. I've read it here before, and I was asked to read it again. And I was building a table, and I wrote a list of considerations before deciding the length and width. And it's obviously going to feed into the rest of the message. It's called The Perfect Dimensions for a Table. When constructing a table, one must consider for who and how many the table is built for. What does the table encourage of us? For how many elbows on or off the table and directions of conversation is the table built? Does it keep people close in conversation, or does it lead people to lean in towards one another from across? Are they able to serve themselves, or does it invite people to ask to be passed to and shared with? How many inches are between each seat? How many secrets between each seat? Beneath the cloth touches of the thigh, are they spaced far enough apart for the large or frail to easily leave and rejoin? Or is it by its own design that table neighbours need to make concessions for one another, negotiating what spaces belong to one, the other, and all? Can we discuss politics at the table, or make bad jokes, or speak of what is culturally taboo? Is bread broken at the table, or is it cut before? Is it okay to be drunk at the table? Does the table allow for feet on it? Can we dance? Are children present, or do they have their own table? Can small children reach the centre of the table, and are they served first? Does the table hold big pots and lots of flowers, children's toys, Christmas bonbon wrappers, and elaborate candelabras? Is it big enough to hold unopened bills? Is it sturdy enough to hold a lifeless body? Does it hold a family that's breaking or can't come together? Is it used as a workbench, a production line, an altar? Does the distance and the surface provide for the acoustics and the resonance for singing, and does it match for the solemnity of prayer? Is an extra place set, and is that extra place taken? Do we set mum and dad apart down at different ends of the table, and would they welcome one another if this were their table? Does one eat there when one is alone? When building a table, one must consider for who and how many the table is built. When the social worker comes to the home, what does the table tell them? Can others pull chairs around it easily? Does it move easily to where it needs to be, or is it foundational and unmoving? How long can one sit there? Is the table unbearable? What can the table bear? Is it uncomfortable? Do long lunches stretch into light dinners? If uninvited guests arrive, does the table get bigger? Who gets up from the table? Who stays? Who cleans? How long will the table last? Can it be replaced? Can the table be repaired? Does it go to the eldest child, or does it stay with the home? Surely you build a table that survives you. When constructing a table, one must consider for who and how many the table is built. And when considering these things, we can understand that the perfect dimensions of a table, and that the scandal of the table, is that the table is built for all. Let's pray. God, may you nourish our lives with people so different to us, and nourish our table with these people that are so different to us, that they teach us to make a place for you. Amen. All right. The theme for today is there is a place set for you. Now, I love Luke. I love reading Luke. I like to think Luke is like me, like a really big guy. He's really social justice focused, but all through the book of Luke, he obsesses on meals. His favourite His favourite metaphor is the meal, and he keeps coming back to it. I like to think that Luke just loved eating, drinking, and sharing with his friends. And there's so many things that are in Luke that, in Matthew that Luke skips. See, Matthew's got all eight Beatitudes, and Luke's got he's got four. And he's like, oh, look, and then Jesus said some stuff. But hold on, and then we had this other meal, right? And he keeps going back to meals. So in Luke 5, we've got Jesus at the banquet with Levi, the tax collector's house, and his sinner mates. In Luke 7, we have Jesus eating at the house of Simon the Pharisees with his sinful woman. In Luke 9, Jesus breaks bread at Bethsaida. He feeds 5,000. Luke 10, Jesus goes to Martha and Mary's house for dinner. Luke 11, Jesus eats a noon meal with the Pharisees, and he really upsets them. Luke 14, there's the Sabbath dinner at the Pharisee's house. Luke 19, Jesus goes to Zacchaeus' house with the tax collectors and others. Luke 22, Lord's Supper with the disciples. And then in Luke 24, we've got two. He's got the breaking of bread with Emmaus, and then he's got supper with the disciples. Now, I'm not going to spend all day looking at Scripture, but I do want Joshy to jump into 1 Peter 4, verses 9 and 10.
Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful servants of God's grace in its various forms.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh. Josh is going to come back a little bit later. But offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. So in Hebrew, practice, I'm going to get this wrong, all right? Practice haknosis ochim, right? With one another without kvetching, whinging. Practice hospitality without whinging. Now, the Jewish word used here for hospitality, haknosis or kim, I'm butchering it, I can hear it. It's the mitzvah, it's the good deed or the commandment of bringing in guests. Now, during Shabbat, the day of rest in Judaism, it's customary to serve a large banquet or feast and to invite anyone coming, and it is considered such a duty, such an opportunity to fulfill the role of the mitzvah of hospitality. Haknosis or kim, right? It is considered one of the most important Jewish values, and even in the Talmud, it says that welcoming guests is greater than welcoming the divine presence. It's a big deal, right? So in Luke 14, Jesus pretty much just rocks up at the house of the Pharisees. So in Luke 11, he upset them. He went over. He was invited over for dinner, and he goes in, and Jesus just starts spitting straight fire at them. He is letting them know exactly how he feels about them. And then halfway through, they're like, Jesus, stop, you're insulting us. And he goes, hold on, I've got some more. And he goes even harder and he doubles down. And they end up chasing him out of the house and being like, we're going to catch you out on this stuff. And Jesus is like, I'm out of here. So in Luke 14, Jesus does this cheeky thing. The text is really, really clear to say that he rocks up on a Saturday to the house of the Pharisees and he knocks on the door and he's like, Haknasas or Kim, let's go, shalom, you know? And he walks in and they're kind of caught because they're like, well, we kind of have to let this guy come in. And they're spending the whole time trying to trip him up. But it's this really beautiful way in which the power dynamic is fundamentally flipped. They've been trying to catch Jesus out, and then Jesus is like, okay, let's see how you guys do. See, I'm really privileged to do some of the work that I do. I've worked in and around advocacy for ages, whether it's been disability support work or street-based feeding programs or, you know, unions or government, whatever it is. And there's something that I love about the role of advocacy. A lot of people here do this work as well, so you will understand this, but there is something so fundamental, so beautiful about going, you've got dignity. It's not something that you give someone back. It's something that they fundamentally rediscover in themselves, right? So sometimes we use legislation, or sometimes we use different contracts and stuff, or sometimes we use a care plan and we say, this is wrong and this should not be happening and this is how we remedy this situation. Sometimes we can't do that. Sometimes there are oppressive forces or powers or laws or whatever by design that actually keep people down and... our job as advocates is to see how we can work within those things and reverse them. Sometimes you can't get people a settlement. Sometimes you can't get people an outcome that they want, but sometimes one of the best things you can do is you can go, but you still have dignity. You are still a mother. You're still a brother. You are a child of God. Come on. Thank you. And sometimes it's the fundamental flipping of these dynamics that are really important to realize these things. So look, who does Jesus hang with? It's not a secret. You guys know it as well as I do. Jesus spends his time with various people that are hated for various reasons. You've got, you know, the sinful woman and the poor and the cast out, the drunkards, the gamblers. You know, who else are they, guys? Sinners, dishonorable people, people who despise and also systematically oppressed. You've got people of different cultures and different creeds. And then in Luke 19, Jesus gets called out by all of these people, by the Pharisees for hanging out with all these people. Why are you inviting these guys to dinner? I don't like it. But then in Luke 19, something really funny happens. Jesus is walking down the road. He's on the way to Jericho, and there's a little guy called Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus climbs a tree, and Zacchaeus is a tax collector. And the tax collectors are hated, right? Because, and not just by the Pharisees, they're hated by everyone. All the other sinners that we just listed, they're like, oh no, but the tax collectors are the worst. See, the tax collectors, I need you to understand this, they are despised. These people are Jews who collect taxes for Rome. Now, they are an absolutely reviled because of their perceived greed and collaboration with an occupying force, the Roman occupiers. So these are people in an occupied land. They amass their wealth by demanding tax payments in excess of what Rome had levied, and they would keep the difference. They were ripping off their mates. They were extortionate thieves, and Zacchaeus isn't just a tax collector. He's a chief tax collector, or a provincial tax collector, what we would now call a tax farmer. Now, the despised, they hate them. So imagine you're a farmer, you're a carpenter, you're a fisherman, you're maybe a balsam trader in Jericho, and you're just trying to keep your livelihood amidst a Roman occupation. And then one of your own, someone just like you, who is oppressed like you, a descendant of Abraham, he rips you off. He's subverting the same oppression that you are having to go through, and he's not going through it in solidarity with you. It's undermining and it's betrayal. And in the union movement, we call these people scabs. We don't like them, right? Now, we're all going to have a time in our life when we feel that we have done the worst thing possible. We have upset the people that we love the most. We've done something that feels completely unforgivable, and maybe you lay on your couch and your bed and you can't bring yourself to do any different, to go back in time and change it, and you would give everything to do that, and you can't. This is how sometimes I think that Zacchaeus feels. He lives in a community with people that he's ripped off for so long. And so they're upset when Zacchaeus is asked by Jesus, hey Zacchaeus, I want to come have dinner with you. We're coming to your house. And they're so upset by it. But one thing that's so important here is the way in which Zacchaeus' relationship is remedied with these people. See, Jesus offers to him a solidarity that is for the outsider that is usually reserved for the insiders. Zacchaeus is moved by this. He ends up giving half of his land back to the poor, and he says, anyone that I've ripped off, I'll repay them fourfold. Zacchaeus' relationship to his community is fundamentally healed. So at West City, it doesn't take long for you to hear that we have an open table. If this is your first time here, welcome. The tables are open to all. Phil talked about it last week, and in very plain words, everyone is made welcome at the table. Not just the last, the least, the lost, the left out, looked over, but the reviled and the despised. You, the hated. You, the wrongdoer. As Dr. Seuss would maybe say it, you crazies and you lazies, you bludgers and scudgers, you drongos and bongos, you flunkies and junkies and bums, you drunks and skunks, you tramps, you scabs and scamps. But you hypocrites, you hyper-vindictive, you wicked, you reckless, you deceitful, you disobedient, you thieves, you abusers, you pathetic, you apathetic, you fraudsters, you liars, promiscuous cheaters. But no, you, child of God, you beautiful, beloved child of God, you're invited to the table not because you're any of those other things. You're invited to the table because you're a child of God. We're not recognized at the table for our sins. We're called into relationship at the table to restore relationship over and over and over again. See, the table is a weekly thing and not a yearly thing, because we're constantly being invited to partake in the meal. We're constantly being asked to be involved in relationship, to heal these relationships, to have communion, to reconcile with one another, to take part in divinity. not because of awful things that we are or awful things that we have done. See, in Matthew, Peter says to Jesus, "My Lord, how many times does my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Do you say seven times?" And then Jesus responds to him, "I say to you not seven times, but 70 times, seven times." Some of the texts say 70 times, 77 times, right? So either way, we've got 77 or 490 times. But it's not ethical arithmetic that we're doing here. There's not a preset number of times that someone can sin against you and then you get to stop forgiving them at this point, and after that you can hold a grudge and hate them. You don't forgive that regularly without it becoming a part of your posture, a part of the way that you walk, without forgiveness being a fundamental part of the way that you live. See, it's radical to say that everyone is welcome at the table, and it is. All the dirt and scuff of humanity that is otherwise pushed to the side. And Jesus says, no, 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 you bring them in. You make them a center of your life and the head of your table. But Jesus teaches us fundamentally the dynamic has been flipped. It's the kind of love we see in Jesus that gives hope to the outsiders by offering the kind of solidarity that is only usually reserved for the insiders. I'm going to say it again. It's the love in Jesus that we see that gives hope to the outsiders that is usually only reserved for the insiders. We are friends of sinners. This church is a friend of sinners. I am so proud to say that this church is a friend of sinners. This church is really great at pulling people who are otherwise considered on the outside in, and its work is constant with reconciliation of relationships. But here's what's really radical. This is what's really radical. There is a place for you set at God's table. When we read the table welcome, like we'll do in a second, the first line we say is that this is the table not of the church but of the Lord. If you're being rejected from a table, don't worry, it's not God's. There is always a place set for you. If there is no place for you set at a table, it's never because you're undeserving of taking part. The host needs to learn to set a bigger table, and the guests need to learn how to offer you a place. Our God is a God that takes a couple of fish and a few loaves, and he says there is enough for all. And then there's some left over and he feeds 5,000. And what twisted theology can read that story and say, but you don't get in? See, these church walls were never built to keep people out. All the glass-stained windows behind me know to do is let light in. It is the people and it is everything that comes in here that makes it the church and makes the church so beautiful. So you are invited in. You're not left out. Your community has got you. And we're all somewhere in that long list of sinners. But you are first and foremostly and lastly a child of God. And if your sin ever comes before your seat at the table, then we, the church, have work to do. The verse that immediately precedes the one that Josh read in 1 Peter 4 is, above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. And then we're told exactly how to do that. Offer hospitality to one another without whinging. Haknasis or Kim, if you're coming to the table, we're letting you in. See, verse 1 Peter 4, verses 8, right? It's basically a reflection of, we've heard it before, I give to you this new commandment, love each other just as I have loved you, so go and love one another, right? And then God tells us to love each other. And then he tells us how to do it. Set a place for them at the table. See, there is a precedent for us to recognize the dignity of one another, and there always is. Just like in Jewish custom, there is a precedent for you to welcome a guest at your table. I think a lot about the people that I work with, the way that they're despised, they're downtrodden, the way that they're made to feel broken, abused, stripped of their dignity. But our Lord shows us how to rock up and expect something you're absolutely entitled to, dignity that is inalienable to you. Jesus doesn't shy away and say, oh no, I wasn't invited here. They think of me a sinner, I should go. No, Jesus holds the Pharisees to account and he turns up knowing it's not for them to say no. They can't say no. It's not for them to strip Jesus of his rightful place at the table. It's not for them to take. And we are taught to do likewise. See, your dignity is inalienable because your place at God's table isn't inalienable. Your dignity and your seat are your divine right. It is part of who you are, child of God. filled with all the dignity that comes with being a child of God. It's a dignity that no one can take from you because there's always been a place set for you at God's table. It's the reason we see Jesus bring a long list of sinners to the table because they belong there. It's never for anyone to say that you don't belong. So every communion table is the perfect size if all can partake in the meal. If not, it's got to get bigger. And if it doesn't get bigger, the table's not serving its purpose. See, God's community isn't one of pious exclusivity, but of radical welcome. And I'm actually going to invite our communion servers in the band to make their way back up to the front because we're going to land this message in a meal together. The table has so little to do with the actual table, and the meal has nothing at all to do with the food. They're entirely about who can sit at the table, who can partake in the meal, who is invited in, and who is left out. When constructing a table, one must consider for who and how many the table is built. And the scandal of the table is that it is built for all. The table is about us, the church. So here's the welcome. This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. And it is made for all those who love God and those who want to love God more. So come, you who have much faith and you who have little. You who have been here often and you who come for the first time. You who have tried to follow and you who have failed, come. Because it's the Lord who invites you, and it's God's will that those who want Christ should meet him here. So come.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression. Go out and proclaim anew the old, old story. Go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us.